I'm Kim. This is DNA Don't Lie.
What's up?
And I'm Danny.
And I'm Jackie.
How are you guys?
Good.
We ready. We're
yeah?
ready.
Yeah, we're ready?
Yeah, we're ready for life.
Oh, we're ready.
I think.
Well, it's a Tuesday.
Oh, it is a Tuesday.
The club is blowing up on a Tuesday.
I will have to say, when I woke up this morning, I was very offended by the weather.
Because it was, this is what we're doing? We're talking about the weather?
Well, I'm just saying. It's officially spring.
I don't know if you watched the news on Monday night. Bill warned us.
Oh, he did. I did not watch the news.
Okay.
You always got to watch Bill.
So when I woke up this morning and I saw, I was like, why is it so bright in the windows? Because there was fucking snow. Well, it was like a dusting of snow. Mm-hmm.
Snow blind.
But still.
I decided I was going to watch Bill because we finished watching The Bachelor. And it was the last one.
Did something exciting happen in The Bachelor? You know I don't watch it. So
if you guys watch The Bachelor, then you know that Joey chose Kelsey.
Was she the better match, did you think?
Over Daisy. She's the Minnesota girl. I loved Daisy, obviously. Fellow Midwestern girl myself. We have nothing in common, honestly. Daisy's a fucking saint. But I wanted Daisy to win, of course, just because she was so fucking sweet and cute and lovely, and I thought they were very compatible. But also, he was so spot on compatible with Kelsey, and I feel like that was very obvious from the get go. So I knew he was going to pick her, but I was still just like, oh my God, but Daisy. She's the one who had the cochlear implant.
Oh, okay. I never saw the show, so I don't know any of these girls.
Sorry. So she was very, very, I feel like, in her head the whole season about having to deal with the fact that she couldn't hear. I'm sure that, you know, gave her insecurities, even though she's beautiful and so sweet. But yeah, anyway, not to give you a Bachelor recap.
Don't get married right away, though, right?
No. So when they were doing the engagement scene, you know, he's by the ocean they have the whole setup, the engagement setup. He's got the rose. It was in Tulum.
Okay.
And so they're bringing the car around with usually the first girl that comes in the back of the car is the one that's going home.
Spoiler.
But they don't know it. She doesn't know that she's the one that's
sorry.
But the audience knows it.
But yeah, if you've watched.
We're seeing you first. We're seeing you.
Yep.
You're going home. Yeah.
But, you know, these Bachelor producers, they know what they're doing. So they showed the one girl who he was obviously going to pick. And you're like, oh, he's actually going to pick Daisy. And then the next scene, they show the other girl. And you're like, what the fuck?
They're holding hands in the limo.
Yeah, then they show them both at the same time and they're holding hands.
It was skillful editing.
It really was.
They tricked you and you were like, oh, she's going home. And then they were like, oh, no.
They were like, we've had a lot of seasons, guys.
We got to find some way to keep them watching. I did love the fact that both girls were like, hey, we're mature. We both love this man, but we can do this. But I was also like, okay, girl, do you love him enough? Because I don't know that I could sit there and hold hands with a girl that loves the same man that I don't know. Maybe I'm
and
just
also,
really immature.
You can't love somebody. I'm sorry. You cannot love somebody that quickly.
No,
you can't.
No.
You might feel like you would do, but you don't know somebody well
enough. Hey, you've never experienced what it's like to be on The Bachelor. Okay?
You're right. I haven't.
Nor have you been on Love is Blind. So
like a love gauntlet.
If you've never done the experiment, how can you comment?
I did get through the first round of Bachelor when I was young.
Oh, dear God.
I think I told you guys that before.
We've talked about it. Bitch, you would have been on the commercials. I would have loved every minute of it.
I would have been like the hot mess drunk that got kicked out in like the first round. I would have not. They actually might have kept me around just for a show, you know, for a little bit.
I hate all you bitches.
Yeah.
You'd have been the one at the very end that like runs away.
Yeah.
Oh, this has never happened on a season of The Bachelor. You see Jackie like running down the beach.
I was like in my early 20s. Like that's when I was the worst human possible. I would have made for great ratings, I think.
It would have been good.
Honestly. Yeah.
Missed opportunity.
Do you think you would have preferred to be on like Real World or something like that?
I definitely would have got kicked out of there too.
Oh my
In my
God.
Early 20s, I was honestly a trash human.
No,
so I
be
was.
Nice to yourself. Be nice to my friend.
Let's be honest.
I never actually watched Real World. I'm just guessing.
I love
you
all
never
of them.
Watched any of the Real World. Danny's
like I
good.
Know, I know of Real World, but I'm.
Oh, Danny,
we're gonna have to find him.
You're gonna have to fire up a good season for him.
Oh, we should.
Well, Kim, we have a very exciting day tomorrow. We're both going to see who?
Oh, Trey Kennedy.
Yes.
Yes.
Coming to town.
I'm so excited. I hope he's as funny as his skits are.
I know. I was trying to show my sister, because me and all my sisters are going, and then Kim is coming with one of our other friends, Rachel. And yeah. I was trying to like prepare my sisters for it. I like it that he's clean comedy. Like, he doesn't have to be vulgar, even though I like that shit too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he doesn't cuss. Jackie, confession corner over here. I seriously did not know that. I didn't even notice that he didn't cuss.
Yeah, he does.
Because he's that funny.
Yeah. Sometimes he says, you know, some of the bigger comics don't, like Nate Bergazzi. I can't.
He doesn't either?
No, he doesn't curse. Oh. He's a clean comic. Hmm. And I'm not going to lie. I usually like the dirtier comics.
Sure. Sure.
But I think both him and Trey Kennedy are super funny. So
it's got to hit right, you know?
Yeah.
You can't just be throwing
out. It needs to be relatable.
F-bombs all the time.
And you don't always have, like, you don't have to be gross.
Right.
And, yeah. I mean, it is funny sometimes. Don't get me wrong. But the comedian that we saw like 6 months ago, I won't even mention his name because it was so fucking terrible and he was so racist and awful. I remember that you and I just like dipped out.
Oh, we can say his name. We can say his name.
I'm like,
don't worry, he's not listening to our podcast. He doesn't
even care. But it was just,
it was
like,
Eddie Griffin.
Oh,
it was
my
Eddie
God.
Griffin.
He was so...
Let's be fair. Well, it started out really good. Me and Kim were like, this is funny, blah, blah, blah. And then he got to the end and really went on some rants about that turned into being homophobic.
Yes.
And I think we talked about this on our previous podcast.
There was some racism dashed in there, too.
There was. But it got to be so bad that Kim and I literally left because we were like, you know what? The homophobic thing, I was like, this is too much.
And then I love how his opener was like hitting on you. And you're like, we're leaving because we can't. We're not tolerating this.
Yeah. Because they were trying to get us to stay. We're like, no.
And I love how the guy's like, it's almost over. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah. We're like, no, like our morals will not allow us to stay here.
You know, that's pretty bad. I was just disappointed in his delivery because I really liked him in Double Take.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day.
He was funny in that movie. Yeah.
And so I was like, we got to get the fuck out of here. I'm not, more so, I'm just not trying to be associated with this energy.
Same.
Is how I felt.
Yeah, same.
About it.
And then Kim and I went to a bar nearby where we're telling everybody, like, yeah, do you know what he was saying?
This fucking piece of shit. Yeah.
I definitely didn't use those words. I was just like, I'm
using those words.
That's you, Danny. That's you.
And I wasn't there.
I was just disappointed.
If you're listening, Danny's one calling you a piece of shit.
You piece of shit.
Yeah.
I was just very disappointed. Whatever. Don't make fun of me. I'm just saying. I was just disappointed in him.
No,
in his words.
I agree.
But anyway, shall we get into tonight's case?
Let's do it. Eridania Rodriguez was born in San Francisco de Moricas in the Dominican Republic. I'm sorry if I butchered that city's name.
I felt like it was very smooth.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In the 1980s, she moved to New York. That's what I love about New York. I love that there's so much diversity. You know, there's so many cultures that you can experience when you go there. So
also, side note, your sweatshirt says Brooklyn.
I didn't.
I just saw
that
and I was like, "Do you love
Kim,
New York?
I do love New York.
Okay,
and I do.
We know.
I do have a broken sweatshirt on. Mm-hmm. See, I didn't even do that on purpose. So.
Love it.
Well, okay. So Eridania. So let's fast forward a little bit. Now it's New York, July 7th, 2009, and Eridania is a 46-year-old mother of three living in New York still. Eridania works an evening shift at a 26-story building in the financial district. Obviously, she cleans in the evening because, you know, those types of places,
sure,
they have to do the cleaning after hours. And she's normally done around 11 p.m. However, this night, Eridania's daughter, Yanaris, receives a call from one of Eridania's coworkers asking where she's at.
Hmm.
And Yanaris is confused because she's like, well, my mom left for work a while ago. She's been at work. You know, why are you asking that?
Yeah.
The coworker says that Eridania came to work, but they were supposed to take their break together like normal. But Eridania never showed up for the break.
Oh.
And now her phone is off. So Yanaris wastes no time, like literally no time. And she starts calling Eridania's siblings. Mm-hmm. I know for certain that she calls one of Eridania's brothers. Mm-hmm. One of her brothers, named Cesar, he actually works at the same building.
Oh, okay.
And he does security there. He actually got Eridania the job at the place.
Okay.
So Cesar right away starts walking the floors that he knows Eridania cleans because, you know, each cleaning person divide up the floors.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's calling out to her, combing through the floors. He's not able to find her. Cesar says he looked for her more than once and even went to the basement and screamed, you know, was screaming out for her. Cesar talks to another security guard, and that security guard confirms that he saw Eridania come into the building, but he also says, you know, I haven't seen her leave.
Yeah. In that line of work, you're oftentimes just the only person, or there's only like maybe two or three of you and you're spread out.
Right.
So she was definitely probably not.
And that's true.
Around a lot of people.
Exactly. And actually for Eridania, that's a good point, because the floors that each cleaning person cleaned, they were the only cleaning person on that floor. Ugh. So they were essentially probably were on the floor by themselves. Cesar and Yanaris contact police right away. And when I mean right away, they literally contact them like within a few hours.
Good.
Okay. They explain to NYPD that Eridania, you know, she doesn't leave work. This is like she's a very routine-based person. She would never just get up and leave.
Sure.
And what is surprising, but I was very pleased to hear, is that NYPD takes this very seriously right away.
Okay.
They don't do the thing where they're like, oh, we got to wait 24, 48 hours. They literally, they get there honestly like within hours.
Because this woman is somebody who sticks to a routine.
Yes.
You know, not to out you, Danny, but Danny actually used to clean buildings when I first met him. That was one of his part-time jobs.
Were you ever a little nervous?
No, I wasn't. But
because you're just
we're in very small buildings. So, and I was with a crew of like 3 to 4 people.
Oh, okay.
So
strength in numbers.
Yeah, yeah. Sioux Falls, South Dakota is a little different than New York.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and he's also a man. So anyways, carry on.
Yeah, no, exactly.
They were like tax buildings and fucking like dentist offices. So it was like, I don't know.
So you're like, nobody's breaking here trying to steal braces and shit in the middle of the night.
But I'm picturing it because I definitely went to work with him a couple times and walked the building and everything. So I can envision this. But anyways. Yeah.
But just imagine it on a much larger scale, probably because it's, you know, it's a 26-story building in New York.
Oh my gosh.
So you just imagine.
Well, yeah, if there's one person on each floor, that's a lot of.
Well, they have, I think they each have like 3 or 4 floors.
Oh, okay, gotcha. You said that.
To be honest, like even in my own office building, like sometimes I'm there late enough that the cleaning people do come in.
Same.
And they're doing simple things like taking, you know, emptying the trash. They don't like really come in and like. Like, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah. If you've ever stayed late, you can understand the vulnerability.
Yes.
We bypass your cubicle or office until you leave.
Yes, exactly. that's what they do, I'm sure.
For sure.
So the NYPD shuts down the building. They like lock it down. And luckily this building, because it's in the financial district and because the type of business that goes on there, it is something that is like very easy to lock down.
Sure.
So they start searching all 26 floors. They even bring out the NYPD helicopter, which I was so impressed. Yeah, very impressed. They start searching the area. Police find that Eridania's purse is still in her work locker. So this raises red flags even more. No woman is going to vanish without taking her purse, at least not on her own accord. Even more troublesome, police get to the 8th floor, one of the floors that Eridania is assigned to clean, and they find a hair clip and her key card on the floor. You know, like that type of access key card.
Yeah.
You know, that you would
can't
have.
Go anywhere with that.
Exactly.
I was going to ask you if it was obviously a building like that. They would have a key fob.
Mm-hmm. And so now, mind you, this is a skyscraper in the financial district. This is a place that I would guess is fitted with a lot of cameras.
Sure.
And it is. This building has 32 cameras. To be honest, I was surprised it didn't have more.
Yeah.
You know, for this
with that type,
size
with
of
that
building.
Big of a building.
Exactly. And the nice thing is each exit has a working camera that covers it.
Good.
NYPD get one of their detectives on it, Detective Brian McLeod. He's assigned to review all the camera footage to see if he can figure out, you know, like what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Detective McLeod finds the footage with Eridania on it. He does observe that Eridania is on camera right after her shift started, like somewhere around like 5:15.
Okay.
She gets on an elevator, presumably to go up to the floor that she's supposed to clean.
Sure.
In the video, you can see her get on with her cart and everything. And then the wild thing is Eridania is never seen again on any camera.
What?
Not even getting off of the elevator.
The fuck?
Yeah. As police are searching the building, they are simultaneously looking at everyone in Eridania's life to see if there's someone they need to be talking to.
Mm-hmm.
Eridania was divorced. Her ex-husband, Geronimo, was not at the building with these worried family members because one thing I didn't mention is that they said immediately, within like literally within like an hour or two, that a lot of her family had already come down like to search for her, to be there.
Dang.
They said it was like something that they've never seen, like that so many family members responded right away.
Yeah.
So they do think it's where they're like, okay, why is Geronimo not here? He's like the father to her children.
Mm-hmm.
And they find out that Geronimo and Erdania had recently reconnected. So they were like back in a relationship. So they go talk to him, but he quickly, you know, he actually has a really solid alibi and it checks out very quickly. Okay. So they're able to clear him and move on. Police also learned from family members that in recent weeks, Erdania told family that there was another employee at the building that made her feel uncomfortable. Erdania said he would like stare at her and seem to be showing up around her often, you know, like while she's doing her work. She was so put off by this employee that she told Cesar, her brother, that, you know, she didn't want to work at the building anymore.
Oh my gosh.
Cesar told Erdania that he's like, I'm going to find you a new building to work at, like kind of like a new assignment.
Yeah.
And he tells her, like, just give it till the end of the week. Like, give it till the end of the week. I'll find you a new place to work. And Erdania agrees to that. So obviously, when the police learn this, you know, about this person that she's reported to her family, then they're like, okay, these are more alarm bells. So they go on the hunt for that employee. Police find the gentleman, but they quickly rule him out because apparently he was at some type of ping pong tournament that evening. Okay. And they said his alibi was verified by like tons and tons of people who are like, he's been here all night. You know, there's no way. So even though his behavior is worrisome, they immediately were like, okay, we don't think he took Erdania.
Okay.
Police bring in canine units and sweep the building. The dogs get a hit on the 14th floor near a utility room. Now, that's not a floor that Erdania is scheduled to clean. So that's also alarming. They're like, you know, why would she go up there? She wouldn't go up there on her own. Police search all over the floor, every nook and cranny, and they find no trace of Erdania, not even any trace that she had been there.
But they had hit on that particular floor.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Hmm. So while this search is going on, Detective McLeod, he's still combing through like hundreds of hours of footage. Detective McLeod sees the maintenance man moving throughout the cameras, and he thinks like, hey, this guy's like a little off, like just his behavior seems a little off. The maintenance man, who is Joseph Pabone, is moving around. Like what I watched, they were showing a lot of the video clips of the footage.
Okay.
And he does like the way he's moving around some of the floors, it looks like he's just there to be there. Like he's not like he doesn't have a purpose, you know?
He's not like got a trash can, changing out the garbage, pushing a broom, nothing.
No, he's like not. He's not doing anything.
Weird.
So he's going to the different floors, he's going to the maintenance elevator, and then he disappears for about 45 minutes where he can't be seen on camera. I actually think it's like 42 minutes. After the time that Joseph disappeared, he reappears in the basement. And the weird thing on the cameras is that they're like, how did he get to the basement? Because he's not getting on elevators to take him to the basement. So they're like, okay, he must have taken the stairs.
Yeah.
Which is also odd because it's like all night long, Joseph, you were walking or you were taking elevators. So why all of a sudden did you take the stairs? You know, that's just me. I'm like, you trying to get all your steps in, boo-boo?
He knows where the cameras are.
Oh, I'm sure.
Clearly.
Yeah, because he's been working there for a while. So detectives call Joseph down to the police department because they want to chat with him, obviously. He comes in voluntarily, you know, and they're asking him about his behavior and like everything that they can see on the camera. And he says, yeah, I saw the cleaning people because I use the freight elevator to take them to their floors and drop them off. He says he dropped Erdania off on the 8th floor, which, if you remember, that's where her hair clip and her key card had been found. And detectives noticed something else about Joseph. They're like, okay, now remember, it's July in New York. It's hot.
So it's hot.
It probably smells like hot trash in this.
Yeah.
I've been there.
Everywhere.
Yeah. Seriously.
I mean, I've never been, but.
It smells like hot trash in New York in the summertime. Still love New York. Still love New York, but it
Brooklyn.
Does.
We see it on your shirt.
Yes. But despite the warm weather, Joseph is wearing like a thermal long sleeve shirt and then he has a t-shirt over it. So of course detectives are thinking, what are we thinking, guys?
What are you fucking hiding?
Yeah.
Joseph.
Yep.
Joey.
What are you hiding? So they ask him to remove his shirt. And lo and behold, Joseph has scratches everywhere. Like he has them on his neck. He has them on his back, on his torso. I saw like a picture. I think he even had them like near his wrist.
God.
And so the police are obviously like, hey, what happened? Why do you have all these scratches? And he quickly comes up with this like story. Like there's some construction going on in the building. And he's like, well, you know, I helped out the construction crew by helping them move some materials, essentially. And he says that those materials cause like scratches on his body. And so the police come right out and they're like, hey, do you have Erdania? Did you do something with her? And they're like, is there, because, you know, she hasn't been missing that long. So they're like, let us know. Is there somewhere we can go find her and you bring her to safety?
For sure.
And he's like, no, no, I don't know what happened. They ask him for a DNA sample and he willingly gives it up, you know? So police have nothing to hold him on. So he obviously is allowed to leave. But the thing they do is they start following Joseph around because they think like, okay, what if he has her hidden somewhere?
Oh, for sure.
So they're like, you know, following him around and they're honestly not really even trying to hide the fact that they're.
Oh, okay.
Which in the documentary I watched, you know, Homicide New York, they actually come out and say like, yeah, we weren't really trying to hide it. Which I kind of thought at the time I was like, is that really a good idea though? If you think that he might have her, you know, and I guess I'm also not a detective.
Or they maybe just, he showed his intelligence or lack thereof and they were like, well, we're just going to. Yeah.
Maybe.
Follow this guy. I don't know.
And like I said, I'm not a detective. Never been through the train.
Investigating over here.
Exactly. So now it's been a couple of days since Aridania went missing and police are still baffled how she left the building without being seen on camera.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't come out and say, but obviously they're thinking maybe somebody did something to her and put her in the trash. Well, the trash has been taken out by now. And the trash has went to a landfill in Pennsylvania.
Oh,
so
God.
The NYPD, they go to the landfill and they are searching through the trash, which, like I said, throughout this, I'm like, wow, their efforts initially really impressed me.
The efforts that they are putting in are a lot more than most.
Exactly. Especially for such a large city, you know.
Which is great.
Exactly. This is what you want to see all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
They go through, they don't find anything. So nothing, no trace of her in the landfill.
It seems like that happens a lot when they get to the landfill and they're searching. Yeah. They don't find, I mean, it's a fucking landfill.
And the thing is, you know, they also in the documentary show like a video of that landfill. And, you know, watching this and I was thinking, God, that what a daunting task that would be.
Yeah.
If you show up to this landfill like, okay, we're just going to, you know, because you don't know where they dumped it.
Oh,
like,
my gosh. It's horrible. Yeah.
You're just digging through garbage, basically.
Yeah. And, I mean, just imagine, and you don't really know what you're looking for.
A needle in a haystack.
Exactly.
Essentially.
Exactly. So
a shit stack.
No, exactly. That's true. Detectives start to worry because, you know, it's been a few days. There's been no sign of Aridania. And the thing is, the police chief is starting to warn them. They're like, he's just being honest. Like, hey, we put a lot of resources into this and we can't continue to keep up this level of, you know, resources being reserved for this. You have to remember, it's New York.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things going on. I don't think the police chief is trying to be insensitive. He's just like, we can't keep this up. We have to make something happen. Like, we got to figure out what happened, guys. So the detectives on the case go back to the drawing board and they think that for sure they're like, you know what? Aridania has to still be in the building. She has to still be there. They go back to the building. They do another search floor by floor. I think they said that they had like over 100 police officers searching this building. And they're looking everywhere. One of the police searching the 12th floor calls to the other officers who are searching and says, you got to come up here.
Remind me again, was this the floor she worked on?
This was not one of the floors that she normally worked on.
Okay.
No. Mm-mm. So the 12th floor is actually pretty much, the pictures of it show, it looked like it was under, well, it was under construction, but it was like really bare. It was like down to concrete walls, concrete floor. Mm. There was like nothing.
Sure.
There's no walls or anything. Right away when officers step off the elevator, they can smell the smell that, you know, that officers that we always hear, they say that you know what it is.
A foul smell.
Yeah. There seems to be what appears to be blood coming from an air conditioning duct. And they open it up and everyone's worst fears are realized when they see that Aridania is inside and she's deceased.
Oh, my God.
And so you might wonder, if you remember, they had the canines. Remember, the canines had hit on the 14th floor.
Sure.
Right away, they're like, well, the reason why that the canines couldn't pinpoint where she was is because the air was flowing at the time.
Oh,
so it was pushed, you know, that air was being moved up. So that's why the canines were
awful.
Off. Aridania's body has pretty significant decomposition, like so much so that they, when they first found her, they couldn't say, yes, this is her. But obviously they knew because what other person is missing there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's hogtied and she has tape over her mouth. They said that Aridania always wore like a cross around her neck.
Mm-hmm.
And what is odd is like the cross has been kind of put, well, it has. It's been put into her mouth, like even with the tape. So some of them immediately are like, okay, is this some type of like satanic type thing or religious type thing? You know, because you wonder why that.
Yeah.
That seems to be sending a message.
Makes sense. Okay. Yeah.
Aridania's family is notified. And of course, you know, this destroys them. Her daughter, Yanaris, is in disbelief. She's just really like, who could do this to her? She's such a sweet person. She literally brought joy to so many people. Her brother, Cesar, he is just the one that, oh my gosh, his, when you, if you watch this documentary or even read anything and it speaks about him, it, this broke my heart. He's like, I'm the one who talked her into staying.
Yeah.
I'm the reason that she was still here because I, you know, he was trying to get her to stay till the end of the week. And so now he's blaming himself, but the reality is like, it's not your fault. There are monsters in the world.
You can't predict that whatsoever.
Right. And then he even references like when he had went to the basement and was screaming her name, he's like, she probably could hear me when she was in the air duct. And but because her mouth had been covered, she couldn't, you know. Well, this is just speculation. I'm not sure if you could hear somebody 12 floors up. He's just saying like,
sure.
Could she?
Yeah, that's something he's probably always going to think. Right. Oh, it's so
exactly.
Sad.
Police make a promise to the family. And they're like, we are going to find who did this. The autopsy reveals that Aridania was not sexually assaulted. She was not beaten. There was no blunt force trauma, nothing like that. It was she died from asphyxia.
Mm.
So they said it's probable that Aridania was alive when she was placed in the air conditioned duct.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Like I said, they really hit this hard. They go back to the maintenance man, Joseph, because luckily the autopsy does show that she had DNA under her fingernails.
Mm.
So they send that DNA off right away. One of the detectives in the documentary makes a good point because he says, you know, it's not like a COVID test. You don't find out in 15 minutes, you know.
No,
then we had to send this off and wait for days to find out. On July 17th, 2009, now that's 10 days after she went missing, the DNA comes back and it is matched to Joseph Pabon, the maintenance man.
Joey.
Yep. Police get on it right away and they arrest Joseph, who, like, when they go to find, like, track him down and arrest him, he's literally just like cruising around with his girlfriend, like acting like nothing happened. They look into his background and they see that, like, he's not always been very nice to women, Mr. Joseph.
Mm.
He had, like, once gotten into a dispute with a girlfriend or ex-girlfriend and, like, smashed out all of her windows in her car with a bowling ball, which I'm like, that's weird.
That's aggressive.
Yeah, it is. And even after he was arrested for this, he was caught on like the Rikers Island phone line threatening his current wife. So he had a girlfriend, but he must have been estranged from his wife.
Mm.
So he was on the record, like on these calls, you know, they're being recorded. And he was caught threatening her with physical violence.
Wow.
Yeah. So Joseph is a great guy. So they try to interrogate him, but immediately he asks for an attorney. So questioning gets nowhere. Joseph goes to trial and literally he says nothing at all in trial. Aridania's daughter Yanaris said that Joseph looked at her like throughout the trial a few times and seemed to be laughing.
Wow.
Yeah. So he never offered any reason for the crime. When he was asked by the judge if he wanted to say anything, like during the sentencing portion, he said no. And that was literally all he ever said. He was found guilty of second-degree murder, and he was sentenced to the maximum, which is 25 to life. My hope is that Joseph, if and when he comes up for parole, that they will look at that
what
the
he did.
Board, yeah, we'll look at the cruelty of this, and also look at the fact that he was never remorseful.
No remorse,
and I hope they keep that fucking monster in prison.
Literally,
forever.
Someone suffered like the most horrible way.
Yeah,
fuck him.
And the thing is, like, I can only imagine what her family has to go through, because it doesn't really matter why somebody took your loved one, but you would probably still want to know.
Yeah.
You know, like, did she say something to piss you off? Not that that warrants murder.
No,
but, you know,
it doesn't.
But for a person like him who's mentally ill, obviously, like, there's just so much speculation.
And I don't want to speculate out of respect, but like, there wasn't like a sexual motivation. We didn't find that.
No, nope.
He just.
Her body showed no sign of sexual assault. The police speculated that maybe she caught him doing something or came upon him. They have no idea what that he wasn't supposed to be doing.
It was anger, though.
He like snapped on her. Obviously, anybody that takes somebody's life deserves to be in prison forever or die. I mean, whatever, whatever.
You're an absolute danger to society.
Exactly.
Like, we do not need you to get out ever.
And I think he's one of those people, the fact that you can sit there and show no remorse, not give a reason, because even like the most sick individuals should say like, oh, well, I did it because of this, even if it's a bad reason.
Yeah.
The fact that he says nothing, and then even one of his defense attorneys, and I get it that this is their job, but during the sentencing portion, like one of his attorneys like says something along the lines of, because Joseph's mother died when he was young, and you know his father raised him and his four siblings, mm-hmm. and he's like, well, you know, Joseph has been kind of like a stand-up character up until now. You know, he had a rough life, and blah, and I'm like, I could never be a defense attorney. Like, how do you go home and look at yourself in the mirror every night?
I don't know.
Seriously.
It's them just finding anything to maybe possibly gain sympathy.
Exactly.
I mean, they're doing their
for their
job.
Client's job.
They
question mark.
I get it. They are doing their job. They want to earn a living, but it's just, I could never. That would not sit well with me. In closing, I just, instead of talking about Joseph the monster, let's remember Erdanya, who was a lovely person. Everybody said so. And it's really about her. And I'm very also impressed by the NYPD and how they really were committed to closing this case. And they did.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't know if there wasn't that much involvement and manpower, I guess you would say. Would this have even been solved? Who knows?
Right. Or it would have taken so much longer, ugh. You know. So just a tragic ending to a beautiful life.